Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning once again, cities, towns, villages in Wisconsin, the Midwest, and throughout America. This is Jim Santel. Thank you for joining me this morning. We're continuing in this, our second hour, coming to you from the studios of WAUK Radio here in downtown Waukesha, 520 AM, 101 FM. We're talking this morning about, again, issues related to the grand jury, to the search warrant, rather, issued by a federal magistrate judge permitting law enforcement authorities to go into and seize documents at the residence of the former president. We're going to be spending some time in this hour going beyond that and talking about grand juries, the next process along the way as a part of the charging process. And then, time permitting, we're also going to talk at the very end of this hour, the closing moments of our time together this morning, about a significant plea. And that is the one involving Ellen Weisselberg and the Trump Organization also. So sort of a cascading movement, if you will, between investigative activities, charging issues, and then disposition in our federal and our state courts here in the United States of America, including Florida and also New York. Right before the break, we were chatting about the trappings of this particular search warrant, and Joe called in with a terrific question about the status and the presence and the involvement of the witnesses who are certainly identified in the predicate affidavit in support of the search warrant, names describing who they are, certainly what they are, how it is they know what they know, and this notion that if they are disclosed, what impact does that have upon them and also upon the legitimacy of the investigation going forward. The Department of Justice, as I indicated before our break in the first hour, is very much opposed to the release of this document, principally because of that very issue, that will tend to chill the involvement, the cooperation, if you will, of those witnesses. Could also, in a climate in America that is very troubling, very disturbing, could also expose them to some safety and security concerns if, in fact, their names are released. And so my own sense is that, very much aware of that, the magistrate judge, if he does decide to issue and release some portion of this, would redact their names, probably redact their descriptions of who they are, how they know. And that gets to the larger issue then about what is left. What is left of an affidavit? Does it then become sort of the gibberish that he suggested might happen if you end up redacting virtually all of it? But Joe's question or comment about their status, no doubt that the federal government, the FBI, would have spoken to them about the use of their names and their identifying information, would have talked with them about the implications of that, certainly indicating that there will come a time, either earlier, most likely later, when their identities would be revealed. No doubt that the affidavit would be produced, as I indicated previously, in the course of discovery after someone is charged in this. And so there is no promise made to these people that their names will forever be quiet, be private, not be disclosed. But again, at this point in the proceedings, when the investigation, as the department has indicated, is still fresh, it is new, it is alive, the notion of identifying them, exposing them personally to the possibility, horrific though it may sound and be, to safety and security concerns, even chilling, if you will, their continuing cooperation if in fact their names are released into the public domain. Very legitimate. And the magistrate judge will certainly understand that. He has seen their names. He knows their names. He knows who they are. He knows about those concerns. Again, a great, great comment made by Joe. Something the magistrate's going to have to balance, even as he accepts from the Department of Justice later this week a draft of a redacted version that the government might be able to embrace, again, based upon the magistrate judge's homework to them, that they should attempt to produce something that is redacted, even if it's not in the full affidavit form. So again, we appreciate very much Joe's calling in with that great question. We've got another caller on the line. Mark, we appreciate your calling in this morning as well. Thank you for being a part of us, our discussion this morning here on Morning Cannolis. What is your comment or question, Mark?
Yeah, I think you've touched on some of this. one of the points I would make is that none of those documents should be down at Mar-a-Lago, classified, unclassified, or not, because they're not Donald Trump's property. They're not his to take. I mean, he took property from the people of the United States of America, and he was holding those merely in trust. They're not his personal documents to take. And that's the other point that should be made, is that regardless of, you know, I have deep suspicions of, you know, what a man like Donald Trump, who has profitized everything in his existence, is going to do with even unclassified material, which would be valuable to foreign assets, you know, to use against the United States. I mean, it is just all that needed to be had, you know, that all that they had probable cause, because it, you know, that, and somebody said they've got documents down here, and maybe the people reporting this didn't know if they were classified or unclassified, but they just saw this box of information here, that a place that's not really secured, terribly secured, and that Trump had no business to having those documents in the first place.
All incredibly important comment. Mark, I think once again, as you always do, I think you pointed out some very important things. One is, of course, these are not the former president's documents. A really important a predicate for understanding what's going on. When I was with the Department of Justice for 30 years as an assistant U.S. attorney, certainly as the United States attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, I created lots of documents. Word documents, written documents, printed documents, but also handwritten notes. And you know what, Mark, to your point and the point that everybody should understand, none of those documents is mine. They're not my personal property. And frankly, when I left those there. And if you make a Freedom of Information request through the Department of Justice, you can get those probably, absent some other concerns about their release. They're not my property, and they're not President Trump's property. When presidents leave, as they often do, in the following their departure from the White House, they will take some documents with them, but always only after it's gone through a process of ensuring that nothing is classified, that those documents can in fact be used, perhaps for a presidential library, other reasons. But they're still not in the particular ownership of George Bush or Barack Obama or Jimmy Carter or Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton. They're owned by, Mark, as you said so very importantly, by the people of the United States of America, by virtue of the fact that those are officials who are elected by, who are serving our nation and our people. And that fundamental notion is what underlies, candidly, the statutes themselves that prohibit the taking of them absent authorization. So a great, great, important point to make. And the other point, Mark, leads well into the second portion of our discussion this morning about charging and about how we go about figuring out what happened here. And that is the motive behind doing this. Again, no one has been charged with any of those violations under the federal laws set forth in the affidavit. It could very well be at some point that the Department of Justice will charge the former president, maybe charge other people with responsibility, criminal responsibility for taking those documents out, maybe for altering them, for using them. The question is going to be the question Mark just raised, which is, what were you doing with them? What was your motive in doing that? Were you going to sell them to someone, you disclose the information? And if that is the case, if you had some nefarious, some criminal purpose, some intent, that makes that prosecution, again, which has not yet happened, all the more compelling, right? It's one thing to take documents, to take papers. There's been a suggestion by some of the former president's attorneys that, well, this is just a fellow who liked to have documents from his history. If that is the guess, one thing. If you're going to use them, however, for other purposes, that is very different. And it goes to issues about motive and intent, and it opens up, and I thank Mark and, as I do, Joe, for your very good comments. It opens up the next portion of our discussion this morning, also from the news just this past week, consistent with our regular agendas here on our Morning Cannolis, to talk about charging and to talk about, in particular, the grand jury system. The grand jury system. I mentioned it in our first hour under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. As we know, you have a right to be charged in the federal system, if at all, only by presentment to a grand jury. Once again, established by James Madison, adopted by the first Congress of the United States as a fundamental right. What was the reason for the grand jury system? The reason was that our founding fathers, and you can see this in the Federalist Papers from John Jay and Hamilton and from Madison, they were very concerned about the power of the government to issue charges. In their particular time period, the power of the king, right, to allege things against them, and that unilateral, that very strong authority to charge people with offense conduct, they decided in this new thing that they're creating called the United States of America, we would ensure that power is not vested exclusively in the executive branch, but rather would be presented to a group of peers of people. And that's what a grand jury is. A grand jury is not a bringing together an assembly of government officials. It is people in the public domain. We all know what trial juries are, sometimes called petit juries, and I suspect many of you have been called in to serve on trial juries. And where do those folks come from? They are from populations of you and me, all of us. Anyone, by virtue of the fact that we are residents, citizens of the United States of America, can be called in to be a juror to decide on the facts of a particular case in the public domain. They can be civil cases, criminal cases. And again, I think most people who have been part of that process have, even after their selection, have said, what a wonderful experience that is to be a part of our judicial process. To be able to sit on a jury is not only a requirement, I would offer, an obligation of citizenship, but in the end, an honor and sometimes even an educational delight to be a part of a process where you can see how courtroom procedure works, how judges work, how prosecutors work, how private attorneys work, how defense attorneys work, how witnesses work. And that process is important to our system. The grand jury process also a part of that, but it precedes the trial process. The grand jury system, it partakes of a private nature. Again, people called in from the community to hear evidence of crimes before an indictment is issued. And right after the break, I'm going to spend some time talking more about the grand jury system under the federal rubric, but also as it's taking place right now in a place called Georgia, which also was much in the news this past week. Join us right after the break here on Morning Cannolis. We're going to talk more about grand juries and the process of charging people with criminal offense conduct in the United States of America. We're here at WAUK Studios right here in Waukesha. Also taking your calls at 844-967-2789.